Thank the Lord this morning for salvation. I consider an experience of salvation the most valuable thing that any man could acquire. I know of nothing that would compare with that in worth or in value or utility. I am thankful that I have that privilege and opportunity. I think enough of my experience that I am willing to utilize it. What a thought, isn't it? I think enough of my experience that I'm willing to respect it. That's another thought, isn't it? I think enough of my experience that I'm willing to do whatever is necessary to maintain it or to retain it. I want to be saved. Badly enough to do whatever is necessary to keep it. That's pretty important, isn't it? I would like for us to notice a text this morning in the 6th chapter of Ecclesiastes. And let's read the 9th verse. 6th chapter of Ecclesiastes, and we'll read first at the 9th verse. Here's what the wise man said. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. To my way of thinking, what the wise man is saying, to prefer the alternative, to take away from the sight of the eyes and begin to indulge myself in the wandering of desire, it turns into vanity, emptiness, unreal. It's vain. This teaches me something. The experience that I have in the Lord is here right now. I can see it and behold it. I can work with it. It's real. That's better than it is to project my thinking to something else. Think about this for a minute now. We all have known people who never seem to be satisfied in their present condition. I wished I was in South America, or I wished I had a job in Australia, or I wished I had a job over in a bigger town, or I wished I had a bigger house, or I wished I had a different automobile, never satisfied with what they have at hand. And we look at that and we say, this is a little bit off-center. This is a little bit living in a world of fantasy, isn't it? Daydreaming, always wishing I had the exotic, always wishing that I was projected into something different than what I have. But the wise man said, better is the sight of the eyes. Let's listen to what they tell us, the apostle told us over here in the New Testament for just a moment. In the 13th chapter of the book of Hebrews, the apostle made a comment over here that seems to apply to this. In the 5th verse, 13th chapter, Hebrew, let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Now, we look at folks as they handle the affairs of life, their situation and condition in life, and we say, well, it'd be better to get busy and concentrate your effort on where you are and what you have than it is to be constantly dreaming of something else, and that seems like sound counsel. If that be true in the physical affairs of life, why would it not be likewise true in the spiritual affairs of life? I have an experience of salvation, don't you? If we do, then let's respect it, let's value it, let's draw in our minds from what we would hope that it might be, or perhaps we tell ourselves it ought to be, or look at someone else and say, well, mine's not like that one, I wish it were. Let's take the one we got and work with it. The wise man said, better is the seeing of the eyes than a desire. Let's quit aspiring for something else and let's get busy to make this one what it ought to be.
Yeah.
Now that sounds to me like good counsel, doesn't you? In the New Testament, the apostle told these brethren, let your conversation be without covetousness. Don't be aspiring to acquire what somebody else has. That's covetousness, isn't it? And be content with such things as ye have. Then let's focus this down. We're going to eliminate all the other issues of life and the other things that we could yearn after. Let's focus the thing down and look at our experience of salvation. I am ready to take a hold of mine and be content with it. Let's tell ourselves that. Well, you say, but I see things in there that ought not to be. All right, you hold on to that. We're going to work with that a little bit before we're through here. We'd like to turn over here in the 14th chapter of St. John's Gospel and notice a little of a conversation that took place back here. I recognize that this pattern, this practice, is that what we call it? Developed way back early in the initiation of Christianity. In the 14th chapter of St. John, began reading at the 8th verse, Philip, that was one of the apostles, wasn't it? One of the 12. One that was close by, but understood and was familiar. Philip saith unto him, Lord, shew us the Father, and it sufficeth us. You see what's happening now? We're hearing what you're saying. We're recognizing the virtue of what your counsel is. We're here and observing the life that you're living. But we just like to project out there and pick up something beyond. This thing started early, didn't it? I'm just not quite satisfied with what I got here. You see what was developing? Philip saith unto him, Lord, shew us the Father, and it sufficeth us. We should be skillful enough, of enough dexterity when it comes to spiritual things, to be able to discern between the precious and the vile, the good and the bad, the true and the false, until we can distinguish between the two and without hesitation select the one above the other and eliminate one and cleave to the other. We ought not to need any further support or fortification or backup. When we come to the truth, what more do we need than the truth? Truth will furnish its own support. When I come to a realization that my sins are forgiven, my guilt is gone, my transgression is washed away, I need no other fortifying, do I? Then why do we plead for an emotion? Well, but I want something this time that I can never doubt. What are you asking for? Have you ever asked yourself what it would take to convince me till I'd never doubt? Are you looking for a vision? I used to pray for a vision. I want the Lord to show me a big picture, and then I'd know for sure that I was saved. You know, he never did that. Do you know what he did do? He gave me the peace and the calmness and the assurance in my heart that my sins were gone. My load of guilt was washed away. I was conscious of peace with God. And that's all the manifestation that I ever received. I never had any impulse to leap or jump or holler or hoop. I never had any impulse to laugh or to shout or to cry. I had that calm assurance in my soul. I'm not by any means saying that this is a pattern all has to take. What I am saying is that what he sees fit to give to you that will convince you that he has worked the work in you, receive it on that basis, value it for what it is, and don't look for anything else. You need no further fortifying. You need no further strengthening. If this is what he gave to you, then this is your specific and special manifestation to you from him. Let that be sufficient. Quit looking for something else. Philip said unto him, Lord, shew us the Father, and it sufficeth us. And I heard what you said, and I'm here and watched your life. I've seen its virtue, and I saw your works, and all of this, but I want something a little more. Oh, the Lord said, have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me has seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, shew us the Father? You know what he's saying to this young man? I have lived before you in such manner and with such quality until when you observe my life, that's exactly what you'd see if you saw the Father. Mm-hmm. Now, what added fortification could this give? Are we asking God all the time to re-fortify us with something that we ought to be taken hold of and standing secure in? Without questioning? If we are, let's quit that. Let's take hold of what we got. Yeah. He washed our sins away. What more can we ask for? My guilt is gone. What more could I desire? He has given me the fullness of heaven's offering. Why would I look for something else? Let's value what I got and begin to build on it. I'll do better to spend my time working with what I can see, with what I have in hand, than I will to keep aspiring to something else to add to it or to fortify it, won't I? Well, Jesus said, have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. And how sayest thou then, shewest the Father? Believest thou not that I am in the Father, and the Father in me? The words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father in me, or else believe for the very work's sake. In either case, whatever it is, believe what you have at hand and begin to work with it, because this is what it's brought for, to give us the material we need to build a solid, substantial, dependable, a sturdy, strong experience. This is what Christ came to give to us, was that material. He told this brother back there, he said, even if God were here to reinforce what I have offered to you, it will be the same thing that I've given, because we are the same. We're of the same consistency. Oh, think about it. Believe me that I am in the Father, and the Father in me, or else believe me for the very work's sake. Look over here in the book of Job for a little bit, and let's notice an experience that he had, some of the things that he went through. In the 9th chapter, the book of Job, we would like for us to begin reading about the 14th verse. We all know the story of Job. This is nothing new nor unfamiliar. He was in a great trial. He was under a lot of duress. He experienced emotions and feelings and so on that were new to him, I'm sure. Would be new to any of us had we been in it. But he learned some lessons. He said here, beginning at the 14th verse, "How much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him, whom, though I were righteous, yet would I not answer, but I would make supplication to my judge. Whom, though I were righteous, yet would I not answer, but I would make supplication to my judge. If I had called and he had answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice." Listen to this. Do we find ourselves in this kind of situation sometimes in regard to our experience? I am come to the place that I feel so discouraged. I am so downcast. I have entertained this feeling of inferiority, this feeling of inadequacy, this feeling of almost of guilt so long that if the Lord were to speak to me, I'd refuse it. Now, that's a dangerous place to be in, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
Now, think about it. Job came to this place. He said, "How much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him?" Let us never come to the place that we feel reluctant to bring the Lord the problem of the hour. Well, but it's so ridiculous. It embarrasses me. I acted unwisely and foolishly, and I'm caught up in something that I wish I wasn't involved in. That's the time you need the Lord the most. Yet the enemy will be there to suggest in your ears that I'm ashamed to bring this to the Lord. You better humble your heart.
Yeah.
Get over your shame. Be willing to put it down. Yeah. And come and get the thing straightened out. Because this is the only place there is to straighten it. "How much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him, whom, though I were righteous, yet he would not answer." Satan would like for us to believe that, doesn't it? "Though I have an experience, though I have received what we call a relationship with the Lord, I feel like I'm saved, but I don't feel like the Lord will answer me." Why wouldn't he answer you or me or any of us that's in trouble? It doesn't make sense, does it? Yet the enemy will attempt to put this in our minds, and he'll bring it so slyly that before we hardly know what's going on, we're entertaining the thought, "Well, my experience is not exactly what it ought to be. I'm not just exactly where I wished I was, and so I feel like I can't do anything about it." But you can.
Yes.
Remember what the verse of the song said? You will find a solace there. Where? At the very place where you need to humble your heart and go. "Whom though I were righteous, yet would I not answer, but I'd make supplication to my judge. If I had called and he had answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice." Oh, may we never find ourselves in that place to feel like that I am involved in a problem that I am unable to bring to the author of my salvation. That's what he's there for. Well, but I don't think a Christian experience ought to be like that. I see others that never come to that. You see what you're doing now? Projecting away from what you have on hand, looking over to something else, aspiring to somebody else's. Let me tell you something. Every other individual that you know that's living a successful Christian life is fighting the same kind of battle you are. I know of no real Christian, no real child of God that goes along with with unruffled self-confidence and without any shaking of faith or without any problem of any kind. His entire life is just so completely saturated in God until there is no kind of riff anywhere. I know of no experience like that. Every individual fights these same kind of battles. The one that looks so secure to you is fighting the same kind of struggle you are underneath. He's got his experience to work with and his relationship to work out with the Lord, just like you have. Let's not look at somebody else's and say, I wished I had one like his, or I wish mine was more like that one, or I wished I could attain to this or to that. Let's get our attention on the one we got and begin to work with it. Let's get down to business with it. Here's where the problem is. And to fantasize out there to something else is not going to do anything to help the situation. If I want to overcome and be victorious, I better work with what I got on hand. That's what he gave to me. The experience that he gave to me, the one that he gave to you, is just as valuable as an experience needs to be. It will accomplish whatever an experience was designed to accomplish. It will work to the saving of our souls. It will deliver us from the power of sin. We'll have to struggle for it. That's true. But the potential is there. It's waiting for us to work it. We will never be able to achieve that living in dreams, aspirations. Well, if I just had what so-and-so's got, if I could just do what that one did, if I could just achieve what that one did, you forget about what everybody else has done and look at mine. This is what I can see. A wise man said, it's better to work with that, didn't he? Well, Job said back there, his got to the place, he said, well, even if I called and he'd answered me, yet I wouldn't believe that he had hearkened unto my voice. Did you know that we can actually come to that place in our experience? We get so discouraged with what we got on hand. The enemy there telling you all the time, the best thing to do is just throw it down and get you nothing. No, the best thing to do is to get down in humility and pick up the one you got. The one that you would achieve or acquire if you threw this one down will be just like the one that you threw down. You'll have to work for it. You'll have to struggle with it. So then there's no need to make a change. The one that you would acquire was the same as the one you got. Just take the one you got and go to work with it. The wise man said it's better to work with this that's right here. I know where I'm at, all right? Well, he said, if I'd called and he'd answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice. For he breaketh me with a tempest, and multiplieth my wounds without cause. Did you know that most of the time when we begin to question our experience, it's because we're telling ourselves that God's dealing unjustly with me? He's putting me through trials that I don't deserve. I'm in a test that's beyond my ability. If that were so, God wouldn't have put you in there, because he's not trying to drive us out of salvation. He's trying to keep us saved. He also wants us to progress in that. Oh, some of the richest lessons we ever learned, and I believe Job would testify to that same thing, was right out of the furnace of the trial. Didn't he say one time in one place, I have chosen thee in a furnace of affliction? Do you know where God rates our experience in his estimation? It's how did you perform when you were under the test. Oh, but I don't want that. This is a bad time for me. I'd much rather that you'd evaluate me when I have the mountaintop experience, when I'm feeling good and when everything's going good. But that's not telling God where your dependability is. It's when you're under pressure. Something to think about, isn't it? How did you act then? Well, all right. My conduct, my performance was something less than I would rather it had been. What's the thing to do? That's what he wanted you to see to start with. Bring that to him. Put it at his feet. Plead his mercy and his wisdom and understanding to where you can find where this thing gains its strength and where it has its stronghold, and through the grace of God, break it down.
Yes.
And your experience can begin to prosper. That's growth. Oh, but you say, no, I'm hampered. This thing hangs on and ties me down and anchors me till I can't grow or prosper. That's the reason he wanted to expose before you to where you could get rid of it. Work with the experience you got. It will grow. It's alive. Dynamic. It will work. He'll see to it that it works if we'll yield it to him. Well, he said, for he breaketh me with a tempest and multiplieth my wounds without cause. He will not suffer me to take my breath, but filleth me with bitterness. If I speak of strength, lo, he is strong. And if of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. I would despise my life. That's pretty low thinking, isn't it? Let's take a little better look, or a little better attitude, or a little better evaluation of our experience than this. All right, so I encounter the problems of life, and I'll have the same temptation, the same suggestions that Job had. Yeah, I know that I am deficient in this area. I know that I have a place here that I need to improve. Then if I say my experience is all right, then I'm not honest. No, that's not right. That's Satan that's telling me that. When I come to that place and acknowledge that I have a need, and I ignore that, or I refuse to accept that, and I go on and do nothing about it, that's when it becomes dishonest. But to come to an understanding of a place that I need to move up and get busy and bring it before the Lord, humble my heart and acknowledge my need, cry out to him for the blessing that I stand in need of, that's growth. That's adding to my experience. That's strengthening my relationship with him. This is what he's looking for in every one of us. There is not a one of us that's everything God wants us to be all the time. Now, wait a minute, preacher. You're getting pretty straight here. All right, you think about it. I am human, and God is God. And there's lots of humanity in me that I don't even know is there, that God knows is there. And as I go down the journey of life and these things begin to come to the surface, to the place that they'll interfere with my relationship with him, he'll send the washing of the water of the word that'll expose that to my understanding. And when it does, that gives me opportunity to work with it. You see how important it is that I keep observing what I got on hand, and how much more value it is than to be dreaming about something else out there. I'm glad that other people have successful experiences. And I've seen some that I thought it'd be nice if I had the same kind of relationship with the Lord. But the only way I'll ever achieve that is to get my attention on this that I got on hand and work with that. My experience is just as good as anybody else's if I'll work with it. You take hold of that for you. What he gave you is just as good as you need to take you to heaven if you'll work with it, but you'll have to keep your attention on that. Over here in the Proverbs, in the second chapter, let's notice what the wise man said here for just a moment. In the 10th verse of the second chapter of Proverbs, he said, when wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul. Listen to this. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul. Sometimes I think we come to the place in our experience to realize improvement that needs to be made, and we really are reluctant to receive that kind of understanding because we're aware of what it'll take to measure up to it. Think about that. I would just a little rather have not known that I had that fault than to come to an understanding of it and have to go through what it's going to take to get rid of it. How much do we value our experience? Gets back to fundamentals, doesn't it? Lord, I want to go to heaven, whatever it takes. If I come to the place that the Lord in His wisdom reveals to me, a place where I need to advance, it's because that's necessary for me to get to where I want to go. Then I ought not to be reluctant to move up, had I? Who's going to do that? That's going to rest on every one of our shoulders if we're aspiring to a successful Christian experience. Yes. I want to walk with the Lord. I'm going to have to be faithful to my understanding. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee. Discretion? How do we define that? Wise selection? Is that discretion? Proper choices? Willingness to perform? Discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee, because he brought me to a knowledge of what was required. That's understanding. And because I loved it enough to be willing to do it.
Yes.
That's discretion, isn't it? And so the thing can be solved. Discretion shall preserve thee. Understanding shall keep thee. To deliver thee from the way of the evil man. What is the way of the evil man? It's the way that would lead you if you let it. These suggestions and impulses that present itself to us that will discredit our experience, that will cause us to look down on the work that the Lord's done in us, cause us to feel like that it's something less than it ought to be, and all, this was all calculated and intended to diminish an experience in our minds and in our hearts to the place that we're willing to discredit it. But when we realize there's a means of escape, a place to go that we can be delivered, where there is one that even when I've acted foolish and when I've done such dumb things and when I feel so embarrassed and so belittled, if I humble my heart and come to Him, He'll fold me in His arms and teach me the means of deliverance. And I'll come forth a bigger Christian than I was when I'm at the trial. If it will do that, are we willing to go through that to acquire that? You've heard me say before, I'll say it again. I've learned a long time ago, it doesn't seem to bother the Lord for me to be embarrassed.